Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 12, Continuous Improvement and the Cheerleader. Cheerleading is part of the experience of collegiate and professional sports. It's also a term we use to mean encouraging any effort, perhaps even including our continuous improvement journey. But what is our picture of the ideal continuous improvement leader? I don't know about you, but what pops into my mind first is the enigmatic lean sensei, or the quintessential unemotional master black belt, not an enthusiastic cheerleader. My guest today is Tina Provost. Tina is a Lean Six Sigma and culture leader with a passion for recognition. Through her career as a collegiate athlete and now as a Lean Six Sigma black belt, she has specialized in failing first while improving with a focus on the people. She is also the founder of a recognition and gratitude company called PEP. And when you ask Tina in what sport she was a collegiate athlete, the answer is none other than cheerleading. Tina Provost, welcome to the Edges of Lean.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. And I was wondering if you could start out by just telling us, how did you get involved in Lean Six Sigma? What's your background?
Sure. My background is in HR. That's where I started most of my career, starting with recruiting at an agency called Aerotech here in Columbus, Ohio. And then through that role, I got recruited to go to Cardinal Health on their HR team and talent acquisition. So a lot of my beginning and most of my career at this point has been in HR. Getting into lean, when I was at Cardinal Health, I supported the pharmaceutical segment. And within that was five distribution centers in our central region. Cardinal was pretty far along in their lean journey at that point, and it was mostly in the distribution world. So just in supporting those leaders there, I started to get some experience when they talk about Kaizen and lean and process improvement. And I was very new to it, but I started to hear more about it and I really started to like it. I was also lucky enough, while I was in my role in HR at Cardinal Health, I was asked to be a team member on a black belt project that had to do with turnover in the distribution center. So I was one of the subject matter experts from HR talking about the recruiting piece of that entire process. And through that, I loved it because the black belt leading that project at the time, she was really easy to talk to. She made it lean and Six Sigma can be kind of daunting to people who've never done it before, which was me. I only knew about it when I was recruiting. I would see the recruiting engineers with Lean Six Sigma, and I thought that'd never be for me. I know nothing about that. But she made it feel like, oh, okay, this can be normal for people. This can be something easy, not easy, but this can be something anybody can have experience with and do. And in that, she would tell stories with the data. I started to just love that, and it made a lot of sense. So after that, I signed up for Kaizen leader training at Cardinal Health. They have a very robust program in training Kaizen leaders and certifying people in the business. Loved it even more. We had a really great teacher where we played a lot of games, did a lot of activities, and he kept a lot of PowerPoint out. And I think that's what helped people stay engaged, is we didn't get death by PowerPoint. But so started to love it again there, going through Kaizen training. And then again, maybe another set of fortunate luck that I sat close to the recruiter who staffed all of the operational excellence team at Cardinal Health. And I told her I really liked it. And she asked if I'd be interested. I said, yes. I interviewed for a black belt role and then ended up getting that job about 5.5 years ago.
That's really great, because one of the things that I hear from people is, you know, I have a different background. You know, I came in a different way. I'm not an engineer. I didn't start in automotive. And I think that you having a path coming from HR is a really important way to come into lean and continuous improvement, because you started on the people side.
Yes. And you're a customer of that process too. I had the experience of being on the other side, of being in those events and saying, what is that? I don't know anything about this. So you can start to relate to people who are new to it, that have a lot of questions. You know, you use a lot of fancy Japanese terms and they look at you like, I'm out of here. So that, I think that does help, being a customer of that first and having the people side going into it.
But you're not with Cardinal Health anymore, right?
No, I'm with Covetrus now. We're formerly Henry Schein Animal Health, and we merged with a few other companies, mostly Vets First Choice out of Portland, which is our software platform. So we brought our distribution business from Henry Schein and the technology piece from Vets First Choice and brought that together in February of 2019. So I've been with the company since January of 19, and it's been awesome.
And that's still health, it's animal health.
Yeah, I usually tell people it's very similar to Cardinal Health business, but instead of human health, we're now dealing with animal health.
You went to school at The Ohio State University.
I did.
Yeah. And when you were in college, and I'm guessing in high school too, you were involved in a sport that I think a lot of us see all the time, but don't even really recognize as a sport. Yeah. So tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. I was a cheerleader, cheered through high school and then through college at Ohio State. We did men's basketball, women's volleyball, men's hockey, and football. And that was a lot of fun. It's funny. I mean, I was just on a few text threads still from people I went to college with that we stay in touch with. And they're just like our siblings. It's a unique sport because there's both sexes on the same team. And, you know, you start to build relationships with people, not just, you know, my girlfriends, but I've got these guys that are my friends that are like my older brothers. I don't have an older brother, so they kind of serve as that. But it was awesome.
Yeah, I think you went into it. I'm guessing you went into it partly because of the fun and the athleticism, mm-hmm. but also a little bit because of your personality. Mm-hmm. So what is it about your personality or about cheer that mm-hmm. That you've carried over to what you're doing now?
That's a good question. And I was kind of thinking about that. And I never would have related this when I was in college X number of years ago, but as I thought about what did I learn then that's making me successful or wanting to continue to grow? And what we talk about a lot in Lean and Six Sigma and process improvement is failing fast. And I think I learned that in early on in athletics, because you're at practice and the entire idea of practice is to make all the mistakes there, fail, get up, do it again, try something a little bit different until it starts to work, and then do that a lot of times and keep getting better. And I think that is what a lot of Lean is first of all, be okay identifying that you have an issue and you have a problem, practice it and get up, fail fast, do it again, try something a little bit different. You know, if you make a mistake at practice, we do a lot of stunting, which is where the guy throws the girl up and many times it doesn't work out. You know, our coaches weren't asking us if we fell one time to try something completely different and totally ditch that. We just made small changes and we continuously got better and we fell a lot less. So I think that's totally relevant to how we should be practicing lean now, is it's okay to make a mistake, make a small change and see if that makes it a difference, and keep continuously improving in increments rather than feeling like we've got to change and flip a whole ocean over to see a difference.
Wow. So as you were talking, I was also thinking about that coaching role then. Mm-hmm. Do you coach now?
I used to. When I was younger, I coached some cheerleading, but I did like it found that I have different priorities now. But I kind of miss going back and seeing some of the kids grow and them being early on in their athletic stages and seeing what they want to be and seeing them develop throughout the year. But I don't coach anymore. No, I mean, I coach at work, but not cheer.
So how's that different or similar?
I don't think it's very different, really. When we're coaching specifically in Lean, when a lot of times black belts will be the coach to a Kaizen leader going through their certification journey. And I don't see a lot of difference in how you interact with somebody. We try to understand where they're currently at, what they're good at, where maybe an opportunity is, and then coach to those types of things. If they're really good at facilitating, let them keep doing that and build on that skill. If they're really good at the statistics, let's give them more statistical opportunities because that's what gives them energy. And that's the same thing as coaching a team. You've got different players in different positions. And if you're really good at throwing the ball, you usually don't have that person practice kicking field goals. So I think it's very similar in the Lean world, is finding where people are good at. You still have to do the basics. You still are going to have to do some of those things that are required, but if they're really good at something, let them keep doing that and they'll feel like they're making progress and they're going to enjoy the work rather than focusing on, man, Justin Fields, why can't you kick a field goal? Well, because I'm a quarterback. I mean, of course.
Right. Yeah. So you told me an interesting story the last time we talked mm-hmm. about some feedback that you got about your personality and the role of a black belt.
I thought
that was just fascinating. So
yeah.
Tell that story again.
Sure. I think this was my perspective, at least when I knew what black belt, Lean Six Sigma, like I mentioned earlier, you have that image of a lot of the time it's engineering background, manufacturing, very smart people, stereotypically quieter, a little more introverted. I am not like that. So when I first started in my role as a black belt, I got feedback from a leader that said, wow, you are too peppy. I was probably singing at my desk, which is common because I like to. But I mean, man, when I heard that, I didn't do anything externally, but inside I just felt like I wanted to melt because I was so embarrassed and so ashamed that, you know, maybe people are, the image that they have of me is that I'm not smart enough to do this job. And for a lot of people, when you switch careers like that, going from HR to Lean Six Sigma, you kind of go back to kindergarten because we used to be good at our old job and now we're back at square one. We've got to learn a lot of things. So I'm already feeling imposter syndrome, a little bit insecure because it's new and, you know, that's okay. But then getting that feedback that I was too peppy, I was like, oh gosh, I don't know if I'm going to make it. Am I good enough for this? Am I smart enough? I'm not naturally into statistics. I got there because I saw how it applied into the real world and now I love it. But that was really hard to take when I was new in that job. And, you know, you look at a leader and really respect them and then they say that to you and you feel not good.
Yeah, there are those moments, are there, where you get some feedback that mm-hmm. really kind of cuts. And
Yeah.
And so did you stop singing at your desk?
No, God, no. Maybe for a week I did, but I couldn't help it. I just kept going and I was grateful that I had two other leaders on that team that let us be who we were as people. And then I really started to flourish. I had one, I started to report to her when there were a few changes and she was so empowering and made me feel like you got this. And that, I think that's when I really started to flourish in the role. That was about 6 to 8 months in. And then I felt like I totally took off. And then I looked back when I heard that feedback, I started to look back and say, that was not constructive at all. And that person was taking a jab at my personality rather than actually looking at my skill. And so I became more confident after that. And it stopped bothering me as much as it did, but it was hard. Yeah, I did stop singing for a week, but then I couldn't help it. I don't sing good, but I just like to.
So, you know, I'm thinking about cheerleading again, Tina.
Okay.
And, you know, we've talked about cheerleading as a sport and the athletic side of it and the practice and the coaching. Mm-hmm. Cheerleading is more than a sport though, isn't it? Because there's also, I think, a psychological impact, both for the cheerleaders, but also for the attendees of a sporting event and for the mm-hmm. teams who are being cheered for. Mm-hmm. What do you think that is, and how does that apply to the working world?
That's a really good question. And I like that you're acknowledging that we're a sport, because that is somewhat new of a concept for a lot of people. Ohio State specifically just a year and a half ago recognized cheerleading as an official sport at the university, which is a huge win for us. And they grandfathered in alumni to win a varsity letter, which meant a lot to a lot of people because they fought for a long time to prove that we're athletic. We go to study tables just like all the other athletes. We have our workouts at the gym and in the weight room multiple times a week. We practice, we get hurt just like you guys. And so the psychological piece, and I think there's some extra responsibility because not only are we there to perform our own sport and excel in that athletically, but we also have a responsibility of supporting the other teams. So one sport might be a fall sport, and then they've got the off season where they still practice. We've got our season, but then we still support other sports seasons. And I think that that can carry a lot of responsibility, time management, you know, learning that skill. And the image too, is we've always got to look good and that we love doing it all the time. And we generally do, but I think sometimes it's not as welcome to show our emotion because the expectation is that we're always happy. I would say in general, we probably are, but when we watch other sports like Tiger Woods, for instance, he's allowed to get emotional on the course when he doesn't hit a shot, and that's okay. We kind of love seeing that when people get upset because there's passion. And I think on the cheer side that maybe it'll get better, but I do think that there's an image that we're still supposed to portray that we have one emotion and it's be happy or peppy.
Peppy. Wow. Well, that's really interesting. So there's a lot in there of perhaps of covering up of what's going on and not acknowledging things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's why that sport relies so much on our teammates, because we do get it, you know, having to have an image externally and then being ourselves back at practice and back in the weight room and being okay with having different emotions than what we are expected to show on the field or on TV or, you know, wherever we're at.
When you're performing.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering too about this idea of encouraging, because you talked about supporting the other teams mm-hmm. and, you know, being there for the other teams and obviously being there, you know, for each other. But there's an encouragement piece to that as well, right?
Definitely. And I've started to do my own research just around encouragement and the recognition piece of lean. That's a big component in the culture side of it. And what I'm finding is it's similar. A lot of the studies are around gratitude and recognition, but that encouragement is similar. And what we find is that when people feel like they're being recognized or they're encouraged, or in other words, someone is saying, I'm grateful for that effort you put in, or good job making that shot, whatever, it starts to release dopamine and serotonin in our brains. And that's what makes us feel good on the inside. And when we feel good, we start to do more of that behavior that made us feel good. So taking that from athletics into our world today, I would argue that all of lean is change. And for people to change, they have to want to do it. And for them to want to do it, they need to feel good about it. And when they feel good and get recognized, they'll continue those behaviors in the direction that we want. And I would say almost every person I talk to, mentors, other lean folks, really anybody, what happens a lot is we want to revert back to our old ways or step back in our comfortable zones. And that is human nature. Change is very hard. So that encouragement piece that you're talking about, I did learn a lot of that in athletics and in college, because I see it happening, small recognitions, small shares of saying, I was really grateful for you stepping up in that meeting. They're going to keep stepping up in that meeting. And you'll see those behaviors continue in the right way if we're recognizing and encouraging the things that we want to see.
And then, you know, thinking back to that feedback that you got of sort of being too peppy and not being the mysterious lean sensei, the quiet person who comes in and watches for 24 hours, then asks, you know, the one killer question. But thinking about that and thinking that, about this idea of really wanting to make change stick, what could the rest of us learn from people like you? I mean, I have to say, I'm naturally a little bit more of an introvert. I'm not, I'm not always as expressive. When you and I met for the first time afterwards, I was like, I was so excited just because Tina is so full of life and energy, and you just impart that to other people. So what could we learn from you?
We don't all have to be exactly the same to still have energy inside of us. Mine happens to come outwards. Sometimes people stays in. That's okay. I feel lucky that I naturally like to give recognition and compliments, but it doesn't always have to be shouting and singing or whatever. I think that we can write emails to people if we're more comfortable giving that feedback and communicating that way. And being very specific though on what you're recognizing. So whether we're extroverted, maybe like me, and I like to tell people verbally and be loud and energetic, somebody else might feel more comfortable writing a handwritten note and saying, you know, a year ago you told me something, it made me feel really good and I still think about that. That is good enough too. And we don't do that enough. I'll say, I work with someone in IT at Covetrus. And during the pandemic, we were all shut down June, you know, we're all feeling, you know, just kind of crazy. And she wrote me an email, and she's a little quieter and a little more introverted in that sense. And she said, has anybody ever told you you're really great to work with? Thank you for following up on X, Y, and Z. She told me what she liked about me. And she was very specific. I cried when she sent that. I mean, it's so simple, but it told me right then, we don't do this enough. And it doesn't have to be loud parties and these huge events and to-dos. It can just be a small note or an email or a text, or I think handwritten is always the best because it shows you spent time, but being specific and telling somebody how you made them feel makes them feel like, man, I made a difference for somebody.
So how do you use this in your work at Covetrus?
I try to, as soon as I notice something, I tell them. And sometimes I'll also hear feedback in other meetings about somebody who's not there. I'll write it down and I'll tell them, hey, I was in this meeting and so-and-so said that they really appreciated what you've been doing. I don't know that they've told you that. And I'll try to, if they're a leader or somebody, you know, I'll try to copy their boss or director on it. So that leader sees too that their people are making an impact. So I try to do that as much as I can. And then anytime I see it in a project, when we do pitch outs, one of the first things I do as part of that pitch out or report out is talk about the good stuff the team has been up to and who contributed what. Most of the time, our roles is facilitation. You know, we don't bring the solutions. We just facilitate them to get created. So I think it's important for us to do that for the people on the working teams that we manage to say, Katie's been running all this reporting and it actually sucks because pulling reports in this XYZ system is tough. So I wanted to make sure that we know she's been doing a lot of effort. I think that makes people feel good and it makes them want to work on our teams more too because they're appreciated for what they do.
Working, you know, inside a company, as a facilitator, one of the things that I personally found difficult, and this sounds kind of selfish, was that when we had project successes, of course the team would be recognized and they're the ones who own the work and they're the ones who have to carry it forward. And I always felt that if I did a really good job as a facilitator, then there wouldn't necessarily be a lot of recognition for me and my team. And that was actually something I would have to talk to the team about and say, you know, if you are in this, like for your own personal recognition, you're probably not going to get a lot. So how does that play out in your world? You were talking about that note you got and how it made you feel. How does that work out for you?
I think when we get into more leadership roles, we just accept the fact that now we are the givers of the recognition. And what I've learned through also through some of these, reading through some of these research papers online, is that that actually does start to impact us too. And we don't realize it right away. But the more that we are recognizing others, that does start to build a positive sense in our own selves when we give it. I just was writing a note to somebody today and to tell her how much I appreciated her for supporting a friend through going through cancer treatment. And I felt emotional when I was signing my name. I didn't do anything, she did, but it makes me feel good to just know someone that's that good. So I think we can still internalize it, although maybe as leaders, we're not getting that public recognition anymore and the claps and the cheers. It makes us feel good on the inside that we are even around good people like that. So we do have to change our mindset as when we get into that role of being okay, not getting all of the kudos, I guess. But I think it'll catch up eventually. If you're a good leader and you're handing out good recognition, I think your other leaders will see that you're generous with that sort of thing.
And that would be the aim, I guess, eventually to influence other leaders to do that, because that's how they're going to be able to make change happen and to keep it going in their organization.
Yeah. And the win is now your people love working for you. They're going to keep doing good stuff. So like that makes my job easier, actually.
Right. They're happy when they see Tina coming.
I hope. And what I used to joke is, you know, when we do Kaizen events, we always provided lunch. So I'm like, either you like me or you like the Chipotle. Either way, we're having a good time.
Yeah, lunch is a good draw for people.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you do a Kaizen event, are you doing week-long events? What are you doing?
That's how we were traditionally trained at Cardinal. And that in an ideal world, if we can get a subject matter expert team together from that Monday at 1 o'clock through Friday at noon, a perfect world. That's not really realistic anymore. And especially now when a lot of teams are running leaner or with less people. Going from Cardinal, I feel like we had some flexibility because it's a huge company and departments had 20, 30 people on them. So if I asked for one or two folks for a week, that was a little easier to take on what they were leaving behind. At Covetrus, we're a little smaller. It's just not realistic to take a 5-person team and ask 3 people to take a week off. Also on the distribution side, our busiest days are Mondays and Tuesdays. So we're not gonna ask someone to come off the floor for a Monday and a Tuesday when we need them to be productive. So we found ways that are more flexible for what works with the team. And I think that's what helps us get people more bought in, is that we're respectful of their day job and their time. I mean, lean is my job. So what do I care? I'll do it all day, 24 hours, but to them it's not. And so we've had to find more creative ways. Some weeks we'll do a Wednesday, Thursday, half Friday, get back to it Wednesday, Thursday. Other times we may only need 3 days. If we really scope it nice and tight and get the data before, we can get it done in 3 days. So that's more of a gray area now. And we just have to be flexible with where people are in their roles.
And has the pandemic impacted what you're doing?
Our company has excelled, actually. Covetrus is an animal health company. We distribute and we serve the livestock industry, which is food. And so we've been essential for the entire time. And not to mention during the pandemic, people got the pet itch a lot more. They were home, maybe feeling lonelier or feeling like, hey, I can take care of a dog now. I don't leave every day. So there was a huge spike in adoption rates, which was amazing, but then also impacts our business in that veterinary clinics are getting busier and they need more supplies, materials, service. They need to be more efficient too, because they've got more customers. Oh, and now we've got curbside. So our business has been very fortunate. We've been doing well. But with the pandemic, we still have a lot of precautions to take, and we still struggle with, you know, keeping people safe while they're in the DCs and fulfilling orders for our customers and managing through that.
Have you been doing virtual Kaizen?
Yeah. I'm doing one right now. And it's, again, you know, ideal state, we'd all be together. But on the other hand, it's been kind of, we've found some silver linings in it, in that we can meet regularly and people can dial in and feel comfortable, you know, not feeling like we have to sit in a room with each other all day. That can get very exhausting too. So we've chopped up the virtual meetings into smaller bits. And I feel like we get more done that way, because we know we're not going to be there for 8 hours in a white room with one window. We're in our own homes. We get little small chunks of work done. And each of those small chunks of time are very productive. So I found some silver linings in them. This one we can do virtually. Others, we've said, unless it's an emergency, let's wait until we can do some in person, because it is important to get to the Gemba, go see the process, see what's happening. This one we can do virtually because it's a little more on the transactional side, but it's been a challenge. We've tried to do white belt training virtually. We have, I think we've done 15 classes, and that's fine. And we're doing it. We need to do something, but it's hard to get the activity, the game piece, to be as impactful. But we have to do something instead of nothing.
We'll keep moving forward.
Yeah.
That's interesting to be in an industry that has had to actually grow during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And in a little bit of a surprising way. Though people getting more dogs, I think, is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, that's a good thing. I know.
Yeah. So Tina, you also have another piece of work that you do, which is a company called PEP.
Yes.
So what is PEP? And I'm sure that has something to do with singing at your desk.
It does. Yes. It does have something to do with that. It came out of a few different pieces of my life, but PEP it's a recognition and gratitude company. And the mission there is to make those behaviors regular for everybody and make it easy to do. So in the beginning of the pandemic, so I'll tie lean into it first. A lot of us have heard of leader standard work. And in my leader standard work, I started to add in every week, I need to tell somebody or write to somebody that I appreciate them. I'm grateful for what they've done. Thank you for supporting me in X time. Because while I was locked down, my son was home for the first 3 months of it. I mean, people were not well. I was one of them. And that started to make me feel more appreciative and grateful for my life and what I do have. My company hasn't shut down. It's actually booming. I have my health. I have a lot of support. I have good friends. I shouldn't be complaining. So I added that to my leader standard work weekly. Tell somebody you appreciate them. You're grateful for them. And then I got that email from the person I work with and I cried. And then I started to think about that feedback that I got when I was being too peppy. And I'm like, you know what? I wonder if other people would be interested in what I added to my leader standard work of writing to somebody regularly and creating that behavior. So I had this idea. It was about 4 months ago. I had the idea. I remember sitting on my patio talking about it. And then I just started to do it. And I thought, if I could bring together a piece of lean, because I love this work, which is the recognition, that cultural piece, changing behavior, change management, but helping people get in that behavior, maybe people would like it. If they don't, at least I like it. And if I'm the only customer, then I'm the only customer. So then I'm thinking about names and I'm like, well, obviously it has to do with me being peppy. So I shortened it up and just called it PEP. And so what we do is, the idea is to express recognition internally and gratitude internally and share that with others. So each month members get the journal pages for that month, and they get PEP card, that the intention there is to write to somebody. And it can be anybody from 10 years ago. It could be somebody from 10 days ago that you appreciate, you admire, you want to recognize them for something. And we send that monthly. So I've gotten some feedback from people that said, well, I'll just buy a notebook and write in it. And I say, do it, go for it. What I find is that when you buy a notebook and maybe sometimes it sits on the desk and then you forget about it and things, papers get on it and you forget, and that behavior goes back to your comfort zone, just like we see with lean and change management. So we send the updated that month specific dates and everything, journal pages every single month. So it's a reminder. Here we are again, new month. Did you miss a couple days? No big deal. We can start again on the 1st of January and try again. And so it's that a way to continue the behavior. The way we make it easy is that the cards that we give to people are already stamped. They are ready to go. You just need to tell somebody how you feel and drop it in the mailbox. So we launched, I say we, it's just me, but it feels less lonely when we say we. We launched on October 16th. So it's been a couple, almost 3 months now. And we have 31 members, which I'm very proud of, because that tells me 31 people want to try to be better about recognizing your something good about yourself every day, and then telling other people that you're grateful for them too. So we'll see where it goes, but if this is where it stays, I'm completely happy with that, because some people are trying something, and I like that.
That's a really interesting idea, because it gets you past just the intention, right? The intention is I'm going to send somebody a note once a week or once a month, but I've got to go to the post office.
That's exactly right. I don't have a stamp, and then I leave the car, the envelope, and then I forget. And then, you know, time passes, and then maybe you eventually do it, but you're exactly right. We have good intentions. Taking action is that hard piece. So we try to help people, give you all the tools you need. All you got to do is write a note and drop it in the, we all have a mailbox for the most part. So should be easy, but we're getting feedback every month. I probably make 8 or 9 changes every single month because people tell me, hey, this wasn't as easy, or this isn't as clear specific. So I just make a change right away to keep that experience easy for everybody.
So you're doing PDCA.
Yeah.
This is really nice to see how you are taking all of these pieces of your life, your personality, your past experience, your athletic experience, your work experience at different companies, and bringing that together into something that could very well make a big difference in people's lives.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It has. I wrote on my whiteboard in here, one night I was in my office, probably too late. Now that we have home offices, you never can get away. But I wrote on there, this is your thing. And it has been a culmination of all different experiences. It wasn't just one day you wake up and you have a grand idea and that's your passion for life. It's little experiences throughout your career, in your personal life, that hopefully get you to a place where you do something that you love to do every day. And if other people like it, that's even better.
So that's really interesting, thinking about, you know, when you started in this, right? So you started coming out of HR, out of recruiting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You discovered that you like Lean Six Sigma and moved into a career doing it, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thinking now about someone like you, someone, you know, leaving college, going into their first job, what would be your advice for them?
My biggest piece of advice there is just always be yourself. That may sound somewhat cliche or simple, but I have an example that supports why I'll tell that to anybody. One of my mentors, he is super smart, master black belt, teaches courses at the university here locally. And he was at his previous company for 10 years and we both don't work there anymore, but we still talk and catch up, and he still gives me advice. And one thing he opened up to me about was when he started early in his career, he kind of had this image that he was portraying of himself, and he had to keep that up for like 10 years. And in some changes in the previous organization, he had the opportunity to take a step back and move on to another career in another company. And he said he's so grateful for that because he can start fresh and finally be himself. And I'm like, that sucks that you had to feel that way, that you felt like you had to be a certain way because that's how you set yourself up early in your career. And if you have to keep pretending, that is very exhausting. So I will always tell anybody, just be who you are. If you can't be yourself at that place, at that job, then you don't want to work there.
How do you know when you have that freedom?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I think it does come with age and maturity because I struggled with that early on. In one of my jobs, I would see this other female leader and she was very direct and tight. She was very, very good. I wasn't like her, but I wanted to be like her. So I tried to do things she did and it just was so unnatural and it made me come off even worse. And, but what it feels like is like, I'm going to be who I am and I know that I'm doing a good job. It's very freeing. And you just kind of, this isn't going to come off the right way, but you kind of just don't care. If you don't like me and you don't respect me, then I shouldn't be here. And I'm okay with that. And I think that's what it'll start to feel like when we get to know ourselves a little more. I mean, when you're 22 or 23 coming out of college, we're still trying to figure out who we are, what we like, what we want to be. But as long as we're just being ourselves in that moment, I think we would excel a lot faster because we don't have to pretend and squeeze ourselves into this box that isn't where we really fit. And I wouldn't take anything back, but I think I wish I would have realized it sooner. It would have been less stressful.
A lot of feedback is about sort of comparing a person to an ideal. Yeah. And it might not be the ideal that you get compared to, as in your being too peppy story is the right ideal. You have to watch out for that.
Yeah. And that's being able to recognize too, are you giving me feedback on me personally, or are you trying to help me grow professionally? There was another job I was at. I was only there for 3 months because I didn't fit in. And at that point I didn't care that it looks bad on my resume. But I got feedback, like I was asking, I showed him a PowerPoint, I was getting ready to present and share some data or something like that. And I said, can I get your advice or feedback? And the feedback was, well, we usually put boxes around the texts. I'm like, did you look at the material? Do I even have the right numbers? I just thought that is not good feedback. And that's on the leaders too. So you'll have that here and there, but as we get more confident in ourselves and what we do, you can identify when somebody is giving you good, productive feedback and when somebody is just can't give you feedback because maybe they're not a good leader.
Well, Tina Provost, thank you so much for being on The Edges of Lean. I really appreciate you telling us your life story so far. It's going to be exciting going
forward.
Thank
you so much, Bella. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And just before we wrap up, can you tell people where to find PEP?
You can find PEP at www.sendsomepep.com or on social media, it's at sendsomepep.
That's great. I think I'm going to send some PEP. Thanks very much, Tina.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
This is Bella Engelberg, and I'd like to thank Tina Provost for being my guest on The Edges of Lean. What do you do to encourage others in their continuous improvement journey? How do you let people know how much you appreciate them? Please join me in exploring more of The Edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelberg. This is a Lean for Humans production.